Well, either way, George Norrie was going to get the night off. We'll just say that. Originally, Art Bell was scheduled to fill in tonight for George Norrie, but then Art took ill, so Art has been rescheduled with his guest, Butch Witkowski, for Friday, August 27th. So this is Ian Punnett filling in for Art Bell, who is going to fill in for George Norrie. And I actually have to make a correction on what I said we might be talking about tonight here on Coast to Coast AM. I did a promo on Wednesday, and I took the chance in the promo to mention that I was filling in for Art, who was filling in for George. And I said that I hope to have on Bruce Hood, the author of The Science of Superstition, How the Developing Brain Creates Supernatural Belief. But really, I promoted this book about the debunking of superstition without having heard confirmation that the author was really available. So you could say, I jinxed it. Go figure. And he was not available. But what worked out was even better. This is that time of year when a lot of people are going to be going to their county fairs or, in many cases, more likely, giant state fairs. Ours is coming up here in the upper Midwest, up by America's glorious North Coast. And we'll get, several million people coming through to our state fair. And one of the things that they'll see is kind of a tamed down version of the classic state fair sideshow. And they used to be called freak shows. They used to have acts which were either intentionally dressed up to appear to be as though they were somehow freakish, or actual people suffering from physical anomalies, which found a living, found a home in the sideshow culture of the circuses and these traveling fairs. And I just thought, you know, if there was a book, if there was somebody that was authoritative on what used to be and what is now, what was acceptable, how far did these sideshows go in the past, and how are they operating differently now? So we actually went online and we were kind of sussing around. We found the perfect guy for a perfect night tonight. And we'll get to open lines coming up later on. But first, John Robinson coming up in just a moment about circus sideshows, about the state fair sideshows that are still traveling around, but in many cases are just kind of a pale echo of what they originally were. And we'll talk about the quote-unquote golden years, I almost hate to call them that, of circus freak shows coming up on Coast to Coast. Plus, a couple of news stories. Red pandas found in Tennessee, the Welsh Roswell, and the latest in evil scientry. Next, when we do a little crypto news on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. So we'll talk circus sideshows coming up in just a few minutes on Coast to Coast, and then it'll be open lines later on. Ian Punnett in for George Norrie tonight. Coming up tomorrow night, my usual night, Mary Roach is back, packing for Mars, the curious science of life in the void. Maybe you have heard Mary Roach on with us before on Coast to Coast. She wrote the book Stiff, in which she examined various aspects of death, and Bonk, in which she looked at the curious science of sex, both of which were very entertaining shows when she was on with us on Coast to Coast. Maybe you saw her earlier this week on with Jon Stewart on The Daily Show, where she killed. She was awesome. So Packing for Mars coming up tomorrow night. She's our main guest, Mary Roach, on Coast to Coast. On Sunday night, and aren't you lucky you get me three nights in a row? You're not sick of me already. This is an amazing book. Now, you can tell already I'm sort of fond of science shows. I learn a lot on Coast to Coast, and this is one of those books I couldn't put down. Mary Roach I read all the way through because it's so funny and interesting. Pimmel von Lommel, M.D., a doctor named Pim von Lommel, wrote a book about consciousness beyond life, the science of the near-death experience. Now, you may remember we had on a British neuropsychologist. I believe that's what he was. Neuropsychiatrist? I can't. His title escapes me. But he was a high muckety-buck in Britain. His name was Peter Fenwick. And he had written a book in which he had cataloged the near-death experiences, the out-of-body experiences of patients that were within his care and the care of a small group of physicians and hospitals that he was tracking in England. He was a terrific show. It's still a great book, Peter Fenwick's book. But in an odd sort of way, I hate to say this, but this new book, Consciousness Beyond Life, makes Dr. Peter Fenwick's book look like a pamphlet. What Pim von Lommel did, Dr. Pim von Lommel did, was he spent 25 years in the Netherlands working with, I believe it was six area hospitals, tracking people who have had these near-death experiences. In particular, they worked with cardiac patients, people who had had cardiac arrest. The percentages of people who had gone through these the very similar experiences, many of whom had had no previous belief in a consciousness beyond life, came back completely convinced. So, you know, I think it's going to be an amazing show. It's the stories he collected in 25 years of research. It is a phone book of research that he collated together. It is, you know, however, just it's very easy to read. And he really gets into the stats of life after death. And he himself was not like a believer, wasn't going in to prove some sort of religious point. He was going at it from the standpoint of a scientist. You know, if this is really happening, we should be able to prove it. And so that's coming up Sunday night on Coast to Coast. You don't want to miss that either. Now, if you go to the website, coasttocoastam.com, you'll see something kind of special, at least for me. It's on the top of the fold, that is to say, at the very top of the page, right underneath the George's picture. There's the photo of the cover of my new book. I've been working on this forever. It's kind of nice having to come out this weekend. But it's a children's book in honor of a dog that you may have heard me talk about before on Coast to Coast, a dog named Dizzy that was quite a little escape artist. He died, you might remember, of the food poisoning that he got from the Chinese food treats. I remember when the whole melamine thing where a bunch of that melamine started popping up in American dog food. Well, I had been at a talk radio convention. And before I left behind a package, a foil package of treats, and instructed my boys to give them two every day. Had no idea what was in them. And when I came by, they called me while I was at the convention saying, "He's not doing well, Dad. Something's wrong with Diz." So we lost Diz. But before we did, about 10 years before he died, I wrote a book about him. And it's just taken forever to find the right illustrator. And the book celebrates his ability to be a little escape artist. So you take a look at it. The link will take you to the webpage for Dizzy the Mutt with a Propeller Butt. And it's fun for kids. It makes kids laugh. I have my first book signing in the morning, and I'm pretty jacked about it. So go take a look at that there at coasttocoastam.com. And if you feel like buying one, you can link up to that through the webpage. We're working right now on the iPad version of the book, which should be out in a couple of weeks. That's very exciting to do an iPad version. And the folks at a company called Seventh Sin have been making this happen. They did a really nice job on the website, too, but iPad book. We're pretty geeked about that. So thank you. And thank you, Aaron, and everybody there that's making this happen. Meanwhile, while you're at coasttocoastam.com, don't miss the news stories for the night. Red pandas have been confirmed in Tennessee. And I don't mean the guy who had, you know, trucker hits in the 60s. Wasn't there a guy named Red Panda? I think Red something. Anyway, no, these are fossils of red pandas. Lauren Coleman investigates. You can find the link in our news section at the website, coasttocoastam.com. Also, there is a story about the Welsh Roswell. Now, you may have heard earlier in the week, there was a big dock dump that happened in England. Nick Pope was talking about it in the papers. It's very interesting. They were essentially continuing to purge themselves of all of the data they had collected over the years. in the UK. And the Welsh Roswell is the subject of this particular story. It's just like our Roswell, except more thrifty. Some would say cheap. Go take a look at coasttocoastam.com. There's also a story about tissue regeneration that is common to newts, which they are now splicing into mammals. So the type of tissue regeneration you might commonly see in newts and salamanders are now happening in mice. Newts regenerate tissues very effectively, said Dr. Helen Blau of Stanford's Institute for Stem Cell Biology. In contrast, mammals are pathetic, she wrote. Now scientists at Stanford have taken a big step toward being able to confer this regenerative capacity on mammal muscle cells. And the big test on whether the regenerative abilities of the newt will come in 2012 when the former Speaker of the House is expected to run for the Republican nomination. We'll see if he can regenerate himself in real time on the national spotlight. Also, if you go online, you'll find a terrific website. John Robinson has set this up. We put a link for it for you tonight at coasttocoastam.com. And it's a website for people who are into sideshows and who have either seen them, grew up in an era when they were abundant, or has always heard about them and wanted to know what was really happening. The website is sideshowworld.com, and John Robinson joins us live on Coast to Coast. Good evening, John.
Good evening. It's good to be here.
Good. Thank you so much for agreeing. And I love, well, I don't say love. I like a lot of the images. Some of the images that are on your website are nothing short of disturbing. But it isn't so much that I feel terrible pity for the people or that they were grotesque and disgusted me. It's just I know that there was a time in our past when people with deformities were treated differently than they are now. And this, in many cases, was the only way that anybody that had a huge abnormality could ever expect to make a really decent living. Fair to say?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, when they think of individuals, don't realize that a lot of the people in the business historically were there because they chose to be there. They wanted to be in show business, and unlike today, where you know just about anything and everything you can find on the television or you can find in movies and things like that, there wasn't a lot of opportunity for people, and the mainstream and the employers wouldn't hire people.
Well, that's the key part. A lot of these physical deformities would have kept somebody from getting a job now, which hopefully wouldn't prevent somebody then. But even still, even if they were willing to take the trade-off to be in show business, or they enjoyed being in show business, which, you know, God bless them, glad that they chose that and it wasn't something that they were, you know, assigned to, there were still a few John Merricks out there, right? A few elephant men that were kind of forced into a sideshow world.
Well, I when you say forced, I don't know whether there was a lot of people that were actually picked up and housed or kept from the public and actually forced to be into the show. There was people exploited,
Well, that's all I mean. It just where the circumstances were that, but it's not that I'm, you know, and I'm only saying that up front because, you know, we just got to call that what it is. It doesn't mean it's any less interesting, and it doesn't mean that the sideshow freak world didn't create its own culture, which they, you know, found robust and maintained for decades, where, you know, there were literally generations of people that worked in the sideshows.
Yes, there's a lot of people that, when you say generations, families that are in the show business, there's a lot of people that made their fortunes in the show business, and they went on to own their own shows. And
that's interesting, right.
And they employed many, many of their friends and other performers and other, we call, freaks. And a lot of people misunderstand that word, freak.
Yeah, talk about that, just because you can't help but say it because these were freak shows, but put some context to that.
Well, the word freak come from the sideshow. It come from the exhibiting of people that were different from the general populace or had disabilities or whatever you want to call it. And in the business itself, the freak was kind of the hierarchy of the sideshow. There are people that are called made freaks, and that's people that maybe tattooed people. Half and half, half man, half woman. You know, some of those people exhibited themselves, and you know they were really one gender, but they built up one side of themselves and exhibited it as, you know, married.
Oh, that's interesting. That's very interesting. That they would work their muscles on their right leg and their right arm, and let their left arm appear more feminine and work. Yes. You know, sort of create this illusion.
Yes. Yeah. And the idea of a maid freak in the hierarchy of the sideshow, it wasn't so much that they weren't as important and they didn't draw as much money for the showman. I mean, the reason that somebody runs a sideshow is to earn money. I've been told by many showmen that, if you're doing it without making money, that's a hobby. And I don't think anybody can put that much time and that much effort and that much of their skill into anything and not have to have a career and not want to be able to draw as much money they can through the show. But the people that were considered the freaks were the royalty. They were the people that most likely drew the most money. And we're talking about a time when, you know, when the circus come to town or a carnival come to town, that was the entertainment for the farmer for the year. You know, isn't like you can, you know, turn Jerry Springer on or some of these other shows. And be able to see the strange and unusual.
Your life was building up to that for a whole year, and then you had a year of holding on to souvenirs and memories until it came back. Again, we're talking with John Robinson. Sideshowworld.com is the webpage. You can link up to him through our webpage if you'd like. And there's a million photos to go through, connections, both old and new, with sideshows. We're starting to talk about the freak shows. What was the golden age of the circus freak show?
Well, I think when we talk about the sideshows, it was early on. In the late 1800s is when they started picking up. And they, as everybody probably heard, P.T. Barnum, he started exhibiting people and bringing culture into a museum, the American Museum in New York. And that's kind of the predecessor of today's museum. And then he connected later on with the circus, where they brought out, either menageries or different kind of shows and put them in a tent. And the reason they're called a sideshow is because they're the show that's next to the big top, which would be the circus. And later, I don't think there's any circuses today that have a sideshow that travels with them. But eventually they kind of broke off, and then they went on the midway. And there was a time when you went to see a midway, to where 90% of what was on the midway were shows, either girl shows or black reviews or 10 in ones where you had 10 acts in for one price in a show, grind shows to where, you know, your pit shows. I mean, when you went there, you just go from one show to the next and pay your money. I heard back in the 1930s that on the front of the show, you may pay a quarter. But by the time you got through the entire 10 in one and paid for all the dings, and what we're talking about is pitch cards or giant rings or whatever the people were selling on the inside, and then went and paid an extra cost to go to the blow-off, which is an extra added attraction, which, you know, was billed once you got inside. It cost you $6.50 you could spend.
Yeah. You went in for a quarter, but you came out $7 less later on. I mean, when it was all said and done, that's pretty good. Now, and we've got a lot of time that I want to explore this. So I ask you about the golden age. So when did the sideshow start to wane in popularity? When did sideshows shift to county and state fairs? What year? You know,
I can't give you a year. I'm not really a historian.
Okay.
I'm more of an archivist. And
that's fair enough.
When I was talked to about doing the show tonight, we were talking about Sideshow World itself. But I think, you know, as we go back, when the sideshow started waning, it was probably in the 60s when they started to die down a little bit. When things become politically correct, you know, everybody was afraid to talk about a person that has a disability as being a freak. There was
I don't know if it's afraid to. Let's just call that what it is. It's just not nice to call somebody who has a disability a freak. I mean, I'm not saying that. I don't know. I don't think it takes an overwhelming amount of political correctness to stop with the freak thing. But I tell you what, let's hold it there for the moment, because you can link up to the website through the coasttocoastam.com. Take a look through some of the pictures, and we'll talk about some of the amazing features of the sideshow, both from the golden era and then also today. What's still traveling today? And there are still plenty of sideshows out there. Who's in them? Coming up on Coast to Coast. So it's Coast to Coast AM. Ian punted in for Art Bell, who's in for George Nouri. The show that Art had scheduled for tonight, he'll do toward the end of the month, last Friday of the month. Art will be back with that. And it sounds like a good one. Tonight, we're talking with John Robinson, who's the curator of SideshowWorld.com. It's a website that I think we're crashing, or at least I'm having increasing trouble pulling up the photos from. But it's very interesting, and it's the history of sideshows. Now, I go to the sideshow at my local state fair, and it's obviously changed from how I remember sideshows even still when I was a kid. That coincided with John's estimation that kind of the golden age of the traditional circus sideshow really kind of evaporated in the 60s. But so to go through the photographs and see what used to be in circus sideshows is interesting in and of itself, but also what's still in circus sideshows we'll get to coming up. And thank you for the kind words I've received in regard to this book, which is available for the first time this weekend. You can link up to it at coasttocoastam.com. It's my first children's book. Yes, you can purchase it. No. To answer the question, I don't know when I'll be in Florida or Arizona for a book signing, but I'm flattered. But it'll just have to be, if you're interested in grabbing the book, please do. It's a cute, funny book for kids about a dog with strange abilities. And I don't mean the kind of room-clearing abilities that my current dog has, who's sitting right at my feet right now. Jackula the vampire dog. Holy smokes. This dog, he amazes me. We'll get to your calls for John Robinson coming up next hour. And then we'll find out what you remember from the circuses that you used to go to, the sideshows, the freak shows that you used to go to. We'll talk about some of the bigger personalities and the success stories of the freak shows coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. So we're talking with John Robinson, who's the archivist for SideshowWorld.com, the website we just crashed. You're welcome, John. Sorry about that. It's too bad, too, because there's so many of the interesting photographs I wanted to talk about. So I hope that people found good things. Of course, you know, later on, I'm sure the website will recover nicely and they can go back to it later on. So, you know, bookmark that page that you can link up to. It's not that you can't get on the website. It's just that you can't get all the photos to come up, and some of the links aren't working now. But the cool thing about SideshowWorld.com is that you really do have sort of this growing collection of photographs as people from around the country are finding them, scanning them, sending them to you, right? Because it seems like every day you've got another photo, either of something current or something, some vintage photo of a sideshow personality in the 30s and 40s.
One of the things that I enjoy about the site is, you know, somebody will be going through their grandfather's attic, and they'll come across an old album, and they had no idea that they even had a family member that it was in the sideshow, and they'll contact me, and then they'll scan, and they'll send me photographs that the only people that had ever seen them was the family.
Right.
So, you know, there are some amazing photographs of performers and people that were friends of the performers. And, you know, and that's one of the things I really like is the freshness and newness of the things that come into Sideshow World. One of the things that's important about Science Show World. There's so many of the people that grew up in the show. We remember a lot of the bigger performers. A lot of people out there have probably seen the movie Freaks, Johnny Eck. A lot of the people that were in that movie, people remember. But there's a lot of people that worked in the business that never wrote the history down.
Sure.
Or they shared it with the family. And that's the kind of stuff that comes in. I mean, the people that contributed will share things that only they know.
Well, wouldn't there have literally been hundreds of people, if not thousands, that were featured performers in one sideshow or another over the years?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things, people would be hired to work at a show, and they may work at several shows over a season. It may not be that they with the one sideshow, they may show up at this spot, and then the show will make a jump, and there's a show closer that they'd go and perform on that show. And then some people run their own shows to where they traveled and they took the people that they hired with them. Al Tomini and Jeannie Tomini was a giant, the smallest half lady in the world, or the only half lady in the world. They owned their own show, and they took it all over the country.
You say half lady. What do you mean by that?
Well, she didn't have anything below her torso, no legs. And she would perform acrobatics and talk to people and do different things in the show.
Huh. And he was the world's tallest man at the time?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And they were partners.
World tallest man. There was a lot of world tallest men traveling with different sideshows, but Al was one of the larger people that toured.
Who were the biggest success stories? Who were the ones that made the most money or at least gathered the most fame in their day?
Well, I think as you look back at some of the people, Al Tomini and his wife did well. They actually were able to retire, and in fact, Al died in the 60s, and they built in Gibsonton, Florida, was where a lot of the show people wintered, and they went down and built what was called the Giants Camp. And then a lot of the show people followed them down, so they had a pretty good run with their shows. Johnny Eck was another person. He was also a half man, and he was exhibited all over the country and did fairly well.
How much could somebody make? Any idea?
I've heard that some people draw as much as $400 or $500 a week, which is a lot of money.
In 19 whatever, yeah. So then but that's just a couple of, because like you can see almost in every one of these sideshows, they had kind of they often had the same type of person. You had the fat lady, which might be called the dainty girl, or they might have different names for, and then they would have, somebody who was a strong man, or they might have, what were the stock characters almost that every sideshow / freak show would have?
Well, a lot of the shows in the 10 and 1, they'd have a giant. They would have, maybe a little person or a midget, as they were called. They would have a fat lady or a fat man in the show. They would have sword swallowers. They would have human pincushions. They may have a ventriloquist, which is they called a vent. They may have jugglers, bagpipers, depending on what year that was, because, again, those were things that most people hadn't heard.
Right.
So there'd be a variety, a tattooed person.
Yeah, that's not nearly as striking that now as it was then. You see tattooed people everywhere.
Yeah, I had one of the showmen, long-running showmen that's been around for many, many years, is Ward Hall and Chris Christ, and they run the World of Wonder sideshow, and he's kind of the king of the sideshows, and he's been around probably longer than most of the other people, and he still brings shows out every season. He told me at one time that you can't sell a fat man or a fat person on a sideshow today because there's so many of them.
Right.
And the same thing with tattoo people. I mean, a lot of people won't pay because just about everybody has tattoos now.
You can see them anywhere. I remember, and check me on this. In fact, again, we're talking with John Robinson, who's the archivist for Sideshow World, a website which we have blown up that has a that chronicles the life of the freak show slash sideshow of the last 100 some odd years, and is adding new, you know, photographs all the time and new posters and stuff. So if you find something, this is a great place to share it. But the thing that caught my eye once, I remember, I think I must have been in college, and I went to a county fair in Illinois, and walking through, they had just a small sideshow area. And I went through, and one of the people, and I'm struggling to remember which one it was, but one of them was naked. And I was really struck by that. I thought, wow, I can't remember what the deal was. I don't think it was half man, half woman kind of thing, but I don't think it was a hermaphrodite, but it was somebody, and they were actually like nude. And I thought, I so wasn't expecting that. But then I said that to somebody, and they said, oh, in the heyday of you know, some of these traveling circuses, that wouldn't have been unusual. Was that unusual?
Well, a lot of times they would have a person that would be in the blow off, and they would advertise.
Explain the blow off, just again.
Blow off or the annex. You would come into a sideshow. We're talking about a 10-in-1 or a large show, and there would be a curtain at the end of the show. And inside the show, you would have a lecturer, or sometimes more so than not nowadays, a person would lecture themselves. They explain what the different acts were as you went through the show. And at the end, the extra added attraction may be a woman. It may be half and half. And a lot of times there was nudity involved in that. I mean, I've got videos that show people, you know, they'll come into the blow-off or the annex show, which is behind a curtain, and they charge an extra amount of money, 50 cents, a dollar, whatever it is, to go in to see it. And they actually show people nude or showing their different organs in there.
What would they do? What would have been typically the act that they would have shown under those circumstances?
It could be a number of things. It might be somebody in a blade box. That's one of the dings. It might be somebody.
What's a blade box? What do you mean?
A blade box is a box to where you might have seen these one-time magicians use those.
Oh, right.
And a person will get in there, and they'll put the blades down through the sides.
Right.
And a lot of times they'll use that as a blow-off today even, you know, where they'll say, okay, for an extra dollar, come on up on the stage, and you can look in the box and see how this particular act was done.
And the performer would be nude in the blade box?
Not necessarily, no.
Okay,
no,
but who would be?
I've never seen anybody nude at a sideshow that I've.
Okay, but then maybe this person was wrong in saying it, but I thought you kind of confirmed that wasn't that unusual, that there'd be some physical anomaly that they would display and that they would be nude doing it. And I thought, wow, that's a different era than to me. I would think there would be laws preventing that. But, I heard that actually even from somebody who used to go to the Minnesota State Fair, which is a very tame state fair, I would imagine, by state fair standards. But at one point, it had kind of a like a burlesque show, like a girly show.
Yeah, there was a lot of shows that were out there that did reviews, and a lot of girly shows that toured with the shows. And, yes, sometimes there was nudity, even though it was...
Yeah. Illegal.
Prohibited, but, yeah, the blue laws associated with that, you know.
Of the people you said there was like a hierarchy within these sideshows, and the people who had the physical anomalies, not something that they were, it was not a man-made freak, so to speak, but somebody that was born with something that gave them this marketability, who were the most famous people then? I mean, I remember hearing like JoJo the dog-faced boy and stuff. He was real, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And he was real popular. There was Lelo, who was had a parasitic twin, which is, you know, arms and legs connected to the front of him. There was many people that would exhibit themselves that had that anomaly. You know, giants were very popular. Fat ladies were very popular. At one time, that was a rare thing to see in this country. So, you know, there was a lot of different people or different things that would lead people to fall within that hierarchy?
There would often be like lizard people, right? There would be people that had scaly skin or snake men.
Yeah, there were people out there like Priscilla DiBanjo, was known as the Monkey Girl, and her husband Emmett was known as the Alligator Man, and he had scaly skin, and they would exhibit themselves. Very popular and very well-known and renowned people in the business.
Again, we're talking with John Robinson, SideshowWorld.com. We can go to the phones coming up after the top of the hour. I'll be curious to see where the questions go with this, but the things that you remember seeing or the acts that you heard about, they may be waiting for you at this website that you can link up to through coasttocoastam.com. So the circus sideshow era, the freak show era, dies down in the 60s, but it seems to have kind of made a comeback, because there's a whole page, at least one I found on your website, where they're showing photographs of the last couple of years. So what's popular now, and what do people pay to look at now at a circus sideshow or a state fair?
Well, there's a lot of freak animals, you know, cows with two noses, sheep with six legs, also people. Here a few years ago, I had a young lady contact me, and she was real interested in bringing back and reclaiming the name Freak. And when you're looking at that name on this side of the fence,
right,
it's not an offensive name, okay? But I think a lot of the listeners and a lot of the people out there, you say Freak and you connect it to a person that that may have a physical anomaly, you know, they get very offended. But they would go around the country, and it was a group called the 999 Eyes, which are not performing right now.
What the what? The
999 Eyes. That was the name of the troupe.
Wow.
And they would go and have a call out in an area, and they'd look for people that they considered freaks and have them come in, and they put this show together. And they traveled all over, and they were very proud to reclaim the name Freak for the business. I want to go back a little ways, the 60s or so. Were things kind of, there was a young lady attended a sideshow, and she had a disability that was very similar to the person on stage, and she looked at the person, became very offended. So there was a lawsuit started that was going to prohibit the exhibition of people with disabilities in the sideshow. And a lot of people believe there's laws against exhibiting people. But there isn't, and there wasn't even at the time. And when we're talking about being politically incorrect back in the 60s, and even if you go back to Todd Robbins when he did the movie Freaks, a lot of people were very offended by that movie, you know, because they felt it was very much an exploitation of the individuals that were in it.
Well, so. Yeah, I don't think that's. To me, that's not the same thing. I mean, I understand he actually it's not Robbins. The guy did it was Todd. The name will come
Todd
to me.
Todd Brown. Yeah.
What's that?
Todd Browning.
Yeah, Todd Browning. Yeah. Now he did Dracula, right? And so he had lived in the circus world. He had traveled with circus people. He had, I know his story. I read his book, and it's very interesting. He did have a kind of sensitivity, and he told the story kind of from their perspective.
Yes.
And I love how he did that. But that's part of my point, though, too. I mean, I have a brother with a disability. I really don't like the word freaks, and I think that people tossed it around that anybody that wasn't, you know, quote unquote perfect was some sort of freak, or that it was easy to be. So I don't have any nostalgia for the word. If somebody wants to quote unquote reclaim it, that's okay with me too. And I do think people should be allowed, if they want to display themselves as a freak, I don't think there should be any law preventing that. But I don't know that it's just political correctness. I think there's a lot of people who got abused and had crappy lives because of it, and I don't think that that's fair either. So, but let's just put that aside for the moment, because I don't want to get distracted from what's really so interesting about sideshows, and that's how what's in the sideshow reflects something about the society at large who's willing to plunk down extra money to look at it. That's the part that sort of compels me. So, like, what is it that people are willing to pay to see now? In a world of the internet, you know, in a world of 150 channels and nothing on, what are people willing to pay to see that they can't see somewhere else? That interests me about these sideshows. We'll get back to that. Your questions, your comments about sideshows, and then we'll do open lines coming up. John Robinson with SideshowWorld.com. What is it that you remember seeing? What was the act that you were told about that you'd love to verify whether it actually existed? Good chance John Robinson already knows about it, and there's a photo of it on their website, too. If we could ever get the website to work again tonight. Again, sorry about crashing it. But coast to coast, this is Ian Punnett.